The gospel lesson for lectionary lunch for this week is Mark 6. We're continuing to read through the Gospel of Mark. We've had several lessons now. Last week, you'll remember, we had the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark 6, 35 to 44. And coming up for this week, we have the remarkable story of the Christ walking on the sea during a storm. And the two texts are clearly linked together because at the end of the reading, Jesus asked the disciples, or St. Mark says in verse 52, that they didn't understand the bread. So that comment at the end of the lesson, you know, links the two together. And although there are many themes involved, probably the primary one is Christological, and especially here in this remarkable storm scene. So we'll read through the text, and then I'll make some comments on it. This is a great opportunity, I would suggest, to do very basic but important Christian proclamation about who Jesus is, and surprisingly, if I could say it that way, what he's like. So we'll just read through the text, and I'll kind of work through it grammatically, and then make a few comments at the end. So at verse 45, following on the heels of the comment that those who ate the bread were 5,000 men in verse 44, Mark writes, Kaiuthis, and immediately a nankasen, from anankazo, which means to compel. He, Jesus, compelled his disciples. Embainai is the strong aorist infinitive active of embino, means to get into, or in this case to embark, into the boat, and another infinitive now telling what he compelled them to do, and to begin to go ahead. Pro agen is a present infinitive active, so it could have an inceptive force. So they start going ahead of him, eis ta peron, into the other side, pros Bethsaidan, to Bethsaida, there on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus is responsible, if I could say it this way, Jesus is responsible for the separation between the disciples and himself. As the text will continue, of course, we see the amazing deity of Christ portrayed here as he walks over and controls the storm. But even the way St. Mark sets up the text indicates that Jesus is responsible for setting this scene up, if I could say it that way. So he compelled them to go ahead of him, heos autas apolietan aklan, until he himself dismisses the crowd. So the emphatic pronoun is yet one more element to show that Jesus is in charge of this entire scene. This isn't just an accident. People have speculated, of course, why Jesus compelled the disciples to leave. Sometimes what's brought in at this point is the account in John 6 where the crowds want to come and make Jesus king, and it's suggested that Jesus didn't want his disciples to have anything to do with that. Historically, that may very well be the case, but Mark certainly doesn't emphasize anything like that. So verse 46, kai apo taxamenas autois ap elthen esta eros prasiuxastai. Apo tasomai means to take leave of or to say farewell to. It's an aorist participle, so we could naturally translate it. After he had taken leave of them, the crowds, he, still Jesus, departed to the mountain in a purpose infinitive in order to pray. So again, separation, differentness. Jesus forces the disciples to leave. Now he takes leave, says farewell to the crowds, and he goes up by himself. And verse 47 only emphasizes the differentness and distance, if I could say it that way, of Jesus. Verse 47, kai apseas genamenes, a genitive absolute after it had become late. The boat was in the midst of the sea, and again, emphatic, he himself alone upon the land, upon the land. So notice here that, we'll see this in a second as well, that the boat is in the middle of the lake, approximately, as Mark says. And so this is not a scene in which the storm presents any particular danger. Now, it's a difficult wind. It's a difficult storm, as we'll see the disciples' boat is being, quote-unquote, tormented. But unlike the first storm-stilling scene where the disciples are perishing, there's no fear involved here, at least there's none recorded, until Jesus shows up. It's a remarkable thing, and again, invites us to some very profound, basic Christian truth. So now the scene is set. Jesus has set it. There is a distance, a difference, a distinction, and now the remarkable action takes place. Verse 48. Literally, and seeing them being tortured as they sailed, for the wind was contrary to them or against them. So probably take the participle idon from harao as because he saw them being tormented. The participle here could be kind of a supplementary participle, as it's sometimes called, just attaching onto them. It could conceivably express, if it's taken as predicate position, it could conceivably express indirect discourse, and so be the equivalent of a hutty clause. And because he was seeing that they were being tormented, ento alaunein, alauno means to make progress, and with a boat it means to sail forward, right? And ento plus the infinitive is not all that common in the New Testament, but when it does occur, it's most often carries a temporal force. So while they were being tormented, while they were sailing. And then Mark explains, as he loves to, with his gar clauses, he explains why, for the wind was against them. Again, it's a difficult situation, but these are fishermen, they're veterans, and there's no hint of fear here. It's just a difficult storm situation. They've made it as far as the middle of the lake, and Jesus sees that this is the case. I suppose since it's dark, and it's the middle of the night, and it's some kilometers away probably, we're supposed to understand that Christ perceives here with supernatural knowledge, especially given what's about to happen. So all that's the kind of attached to the participle, because Jesus saw this. Then we get in the middle of verse 48, peri tetartein philakein tes nictas, irkitai prasautas, peri paton epites thalases, kai ethelin par elthein autus. About the fourth watch of the night, so what we would call in the middle of the night or maybe very early in the morning, the fourth watch would run approximately from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. He comes, historical present, some fronting there, emphasis. He comes to them, peripaton, walking. Now, again, this... I suppose you could take this participle as expressing manner by walking on the water, but probably just take it together closely with erketai as one verbal idea. This is what Dr. Velz's grammar calls, what does he call this? It's not supplementary, but attendant circumstances. He comes walking upon the sea or upon the lake. And now this is a very interesting comment, and it occasions all manner of activity on the part of commentators. And Athelin, he wanted, or he was wanting, par elthenis from par erkomai, means to pass by, to pass them by. Now, what's the significance of this? You're just not quite sure. The most likely guess that I've seen, at least seems to me, that this is just what Yahweh does when he offers a theophany. He passes by like he passed by Moses in Exodus when Moses hides in the cleft of the rock and so forth. This seems likely that what Christ had in mind, if I could say it this way, is that he was going to simply to manifest his supreme authority. he was going to manifest this amazing truth that he, the man from Galilee, actually is the master of the storm. In other words, this is a theophany. The Christology here is simply the claim that the man Jesus functions in the place of the God of the creation, the God of the storm. And he was going, he was planning on, he wanted to pass them by. There's some evidence, by the way, that thelo, we have the form athelin here, that thelo can have kind of a lesser meaning, not want or wish, but simply to be about to do something. But that's very rare, and I don't know that there's a clear example of that anywhere in the New Testament. So we just leave it as it's normally translated. He wanted to pass them by. He was going to show them who he was, but they didn't get it. The interesting thing is that they don't get who it is, and so therefore Jesus really graciously, gives them a further clarification, if I could say it that way. It's like so many things else, so many other times in the Gospel of Mark, the disciples are supposed to get it, but they don't get it. And so Jesus responds and offers them more revelation. Verse 49 describes how they don't get it. So he wanted to pass them by and show them who he was. Their Lord, who also stunningly masters the storm, walks on the storm. Verse 49, but they, Idontes, when they had saw him walking upon the sea, again, here is another participle, very similar to the construction of verse 48, where you have the same verb, the aorist stem of harao, followed by a personal pronoun and then a predicate position participle. So you could translate this one as well here. Maybe in this case I would translate it as indirect discourse. But they, when they saw him, saw that he was walking on the sea, edoxon, this is from dakeo, means to think, they thought that phantasma estin, he was a ghost. You translate estin as was because the main verb edoxon is a past time, and this is indirect discourse, so you have to adjust the main verb in the hutti clause to one step back in time. That's a familiar Greek issue there. They thought that he was a ghost, and on ekroxon, they cried out, understandably so. So the theophany isn't working, if I could say it that way. So so Jesus takes steps to make it better. Verse 50 begins with more description of how the disciples don't understand. Pontes garotan eidon kai etarakthason. For all saw him, and they were troubled. I mean, terasso means to trouble. Of course, here you could translate freaked out or something really, really strong. And I think it might be well for the sermon to try to actually paint this scene historically and to invite people to imagine what it would have been like to see this man doing what Jesus did. It's really incredible, apart, literally incredible, apart from the gift of the Holy Spirit given faith. So now we get the divine condescension. Jesus doesn't keep going. He stops, apparently, in the middle of verse 50 there, hade eothis, but he immediately spoke with them, and he says, historic present, to them, tharseta, this is from tharseo, this is a present imperative, be of good courage, ego eme, I am he, me phobesta, stop being afraid, me plus the present imperative can, and it does in this context, I would suggest, mean to stop doing something. They're clearly afraid at this point. He invites them, stop being afraid. Now, on ego eime, it's easy to make too much of this. I'll just say it this way, although we should make enough of it. Strictly speaking, grammatically, ego eime in Greek is not the divine name. The divine name is ha'on. I don't know of any instance, although there probably are some, since I don't know the Old Testament as well as I should, but in Exodus 3, when Greek goes to literally rendering the tetragrammaton, the divine name, it expresses it as the definite article and the present participle of eimi, the being one. So strictly speaking, ego eimi is not the divine name. As you probably remember, Yahweh in the Septuagint is just regularly rendered when it stands alone as Kyrios, Lord, in Greek. Now, what is going on here probably is you have to run this through Isaiah 40 to 66, where over and over, I think a dozen times at least, probably more, God speaks through the prophet and says, Ani hu, I am he, and there is no other God beside me. I am he, and there is no other. This, the Septuagint renders ego eimi on a number of occasions. And so it probably would be faithful to the spirit of this, to render this verse, be of good courage, I am he, stop being afraid. So it is a claim to deity. It's just not a kind of a direct pronunciation of the divine name, the tetragrammaton. But given what Jesus is doing here, if I could say it that way, it is indeed a strong claim that in him the fullness of deity dwelt in bodily form, and that body is walking on the water. So it's amazing. Verse 51. Kai an ebe, this is from anabino, which means to go up or to step up. And he got up toward them into the boat, and ekopasen from kopadzo, and the wind stopped, and greatly out of abundance in themselves, they began to be, or perhaps kept on being, astonished. Existanta is from existemi, and its present stem, and so you can give it a kind of an ongoing force or emphatic force or something like that. Now, Mark kind of almost, it seems almost pedestrian, in a pedestrian way, then gives us another gar explanation, verse 52. Ugar sin ekon epitois artus, for they did not understand in relation to the breads. Rather, Allah, ein auton he cardia peporomene. For their heart had been and was hardened. This is peporomene is the perfect participle passive, feminine singular nominative, and it's linked with ein in a periphrastic construction. Their heart had been and was hardened. So Mark, as he often does, emphasizes that the disciples simply are not getting it. And then the text actually goes on, you know, to describe more healings in the rest of Galilee. But I don't, to be honest, I don't know why. It seems to me that this is clearly a discrete unit, the reading that we have here. So I'm just going to stop here at verse 52 and make just a couple of comments. I would suggest that when you're preaching the sermon that you really try to avoid allegorizing it. This is not an allegory about what happens in the storms of life. It's a great temptation to do this, but the problem with it, of course, is that you end up having to say things which are either not true, like Jesus calms the storms of life, when every believer knows that there are times when the Lord simply allows the storms of life to continue. He preserves us through difficulty, but that's not what happens in this text. In this text, the storm stops when he gets into the boat. And so you end up either saying things that are not true, like he calms the storms of life, or it's just silliness, if I could just speak frankly for a second. So this is not an allegory. It's an historical narrative that tells us something about Jesus. Now, here's what it tells us. Jesus is, in fact, the creator. He is the Word through whom all things were made, John chapter 1. He is the image of the invisible God, Colossians 1. He has power over the creation. This Jesus does not abandon disciples who don't get it when they should. Rather, he graciously reveals himself. This is basic Christian teaching, but I think it needs to be said. Jesus is not our warm and fuzzy friend. Jesus is not your best friend, not in the way that we normally use that phrase. He is God. And he is God so powerful and so majestic and so awesome that the disciples don't even recognize him, and they cry out in fear. I think there are times when we need to remind ourselves, in North American culture at least, where everything is casual and we're all buddy-buddy, and there is simply almost an inability to even draw a distinction between occasions in our lives which are formal and those which are informal. This is not healthy for human beings. There are things which we ought to fear, and there are times and places when we ought to be silent and to show respect. And in the presence of this Jesus who manifests himself, the disciples don't even get it, and all they can think of is how afraid they are. Now, here's the deal. That same Jesus, that God, is willing to condescend and to reveal himself patiently and repeatedly. He does not reject the disciples when they don't get it. He does not reject us when we don't get it. He is willing to come to us and to bear with us and to reveal himself for who he is. The greatest event, of course, when our Savior does this is when he cloaks his majesty, hides his power, and reveals himself in the unexpected death, unexpected to us, a death on the cross, and then his resurrection from the tomb. It seems to me that we need to recapture the wonder and the shock and the surprise and the joy in this promise that Jesus is who he is and nevertheless is gracious to reveal himself to us. C.S. Lewis has this book of essays that was published under the phrase of the title of one of the essays, God in the Dock. And the dock there, it refers in the British system to the place where the person who is on trial stands. In the modern world, we want to put God in the dock and to demand answers from him and to put him on trial and to demand that he prove himself to us. This is the height of pride and the height of hubris and idolatry, if I could say it that way. To Christian folk, to people who will be hearing you preach this text, you may and can and perhaps should invite them to set their hubris and their pride aside. God is God, I am not. He does not deign to explain everything that he does, every difficult event that takes place in the creation, in my life. We do not know the ways of God. He has not revealed his hidden ways to us. But he has condescended to reveal to us his identity in Jesus Christ and to invite us to believe in him. The disciples didn't yet. They couldn't understand him, and that's what Mark emphasizes. But in light of his self-revelation at Good Friday and Easter, and in the word that comes to us week after week, day after day, we can marvel that the great, amazing, incredible Creator God would be so kind and so patient and so loving as to reveal himself to us in his cross and his empty tomb. So it's a very basic message, and yet in our casual day when Jesus is everyone's buddy, if I could say it that way, it's a good opportunity to proclaim his incredible identity and his incredible grace in condescending to disciples that should know him better than they do. So thanks very much.